Hi, this is Jennifer Sage with the Indoor Cycling Association, and once again, I am here with Tom Scotto to bring you an exciting audio masterclass. And before I tell you the name of this ride, well, you're going to see it in the title of this interview, but before we discuss the name of this, first of all, welcome, Tom.
Hey, thanks. Great to be here.
Before we get into the meat of it, the pun intended.
Oh boy, this is going to be a rough one.
There's kind of a humorous origin of this ride, and why don't you go ahead and tell everyone what that is?
Sure. Well, the original name I came up with the ride was Training for You Turkeys, and basically it was a ride that explored the a turkey. It was a Thanksgiving ride, and I had a chart that usually has the five zones on it, but this time the five zones were overlaid on a cartoon image of a turkey, and which was kind of fun. Everyone looked at it. I told them it's the only chart I have with eyeballs, and that it would be staring them down throughout the entire workout. But basically, the bird was situated on the chart, so we started from the back of the bird, and we went to the front of the bird, and the fun of the class was going from the slow twitch, darker meat muscle fibers to the fast twitch, more explosive fibers, the white meat in front of the bird, and we had a workout constructed. That's what us coaches do for fun, so I'm sorry.
But I was so fascinated by that whole concept, I invited you to twist that so it's not Thanksgiving themed. Although, hey, anyone listening wants to do it next year, maybe we'll have Tom come in and, you know, dress it up for Thanksgiving again, pun intended.
Sure.
But so now you have called this profile
Betwitched.
I love it. So the ride has nothing to do anymore with a Thanksgiving or a turkey. Tell us what we're going to do.
Well, I think one of the things we're always trying to do as coaches and teachers is to be able to give them something that's could be a stale, dry topic. Again, no reference to the bird. But is something that they can go, oh, wow, that's a cool concept and something I need to know about training, but probably wouldn't have learned it or wouldn't have even enjoyed learning it if I read it out of an exercise physiology book.
Yeah, or if an instructor sat up there and just dryly told them the physiology.
Yes. We are going to talk about muscle fiber types and sarcomeres and myosin. Yeah, that's probably not going to be your best class ever.
No.
So, yeah, I thought this was a lot of fun, and it you know, not only are we teaching them something that's really foundational to our riding and training, but it gives them a chance to experience it, you know, particularly if you reinforce various aspects of the class and the drills and the concepts. I think it really comes together. And a lot of people mentioned that. Wow, I never thought of it that way, and I've heard about fast and slow twitch muscle fibers, didn't really understand it, and this was pretty cool. So, you know, it has that. If you're into that kind of thing and passing on knowledge, this is a fun way to do it.
All right. So give us a little outline of the ride.
Sure. Well, you know, like any ride, we have a warm-up. And, you know, I try to bring them in slowly. And there's really two ways of doing this. There's two ways of doing anything, or probably multiple ways. Just for those that are, you know, thinking, okay, you know, what do you start with first? You know, should you start with the fast twitch? You know, explode everybody, and then when they're fatigued, you know, just basically leave them to do the slow twitch fiber stuff later after beating up the fast twitch, or, you know, how do you do it? So just because I'm doing it slow twitch first doesn't mean that, you know, that's always the way to put it together. But for this profile, that's what I decided to do. So this way I was able to warm them up gently, not have to do any big sort of opening type of drills that, you know, bring the body into high intensity.
Because you're not going to get into that till later in the ride anyway, so.
Right. And, exactly. And you know, part of it is, again, the educational quality of it. I'm trying to lead them somewhere, both physically and educationally. So, you know, there was a certain method to the madness here. So we do like a five-minute warm-up, and then we spend about probably 7 minutes or so on some rolling hills just to, another way, reinforce, you know, some of the in and out of the saddle work. Putting some, you know, initial forces on the legs, getting the heart rate up, all that good stuff. So it's sort of a continuation of the warm-up, these rolling hills. And then we embark on a 10 to 11 minute steady state effort, which if you're an outdoor cyclist or particularly a competitive rider, we call this riding tempo, and it falls in that, you know, probably 75 to 80% range. And for those that use the five zone system, it's what we call zone three.
So when you say 75 to 80%, you're talking about perceived exertion, right?
Perceived exertion. Yes. Thank you for clarifying.
Not max heart rate.
Not max heart rate. Exactly. Yeah. So it's, you know, and for some people it's 70, for some people it's closer to 80, but you know, and that's 75%.
In other words, it's sustainable. It's what we would consider kind of moderate to somewhat hard.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. It's not the endurance work, which, you know, is sort of very relaxed and sustainable. This you're working, but it is a sustainable working effort.
Okay.
And I mix it up sometimes. I have some fun with it because, you know, depending on who you have in your class, for someone to stay at a sustained effort without any variation for 10, 11 minutes is kind of tough. You know, we know our classes. Some of them don't have a very good attention span, and then they drift. So what I like to do for the first 5 minutes, and I'll, of course, include the playlist, which you're probably going to be able to download as you're hearing this. So you'll see which pieces of music I selected. I do have two pieces of music that are about 5.5 minutes each. And the first 5 minutes, I really try to keep them steady. And we talk a little bit about the slow twitch and the consistency. And I give them examples like from the Peloton, what this would be like if you were doing a charity ride. Kind of get them into the mode of the intensity level of this effort.
Go ahead and explain to our listeners what that feels like.
Well, that's a good way. Well, a lot of times I use breathing as a way of sort of connecting, because a lot of people don't have all the cycling references that we might as instructors. So, you know, we just have to find that common language. And one of the aspects of breathing that I look at is changes in breathing. And during the warm-up into sort of the zone two, when you're in that endurance realm, your breathing goes from sort of, I didn't really notice it, to, wow, this is very comfortable. I'm not noticing my breathing, but it's in this nice, comfortable rhythm. And like most endurance training, I can breathe like this for a very, very long period of time.
And hold a conversation.
And yeah, just have some, because that's what we like to do in the early season when we're doing our base mileage. It's a great time to talk to one another, because we're usually beating, you know, the snot out of each other during the season and no one's talking to anybody. So it's a great social aspect. But then when you get into zone three and you take it up that notch, now you're still able to breathe. It's not exactly comfortable anymore, but it is highly sustainable. And your conversation with the person next to you, if you choose to have one, is going to be in shorter sentences. And it can be an interesting place to hang, because you know you can work harder, but you wish it would stop.
Yeah, I think you and I have had this discussion before, in that our governor is set pretty low. We can always go a little bit harder, and this is not killing us in any way. It's not making us have to slow down. It's just that kind of mental thing of like, I would prefer it if I was going a little easier. My body would.
Right. And another way I try to get people to think about it is, you know, your breathing is strong, it's rhythmic, but it's sustainable. And you should be able to say to yourself, okay, I can hold this. Like after the warm-up, let's say there was 45 minutes left of the class, I should be able to hold this level of intensity for the rest of the class. It's not going to be fun, but I can hold it.
And for those who are cyclists, what kind of cues do you use? I generally talk about like how far you could potentially ride or time you can spend at this effort. I mean, you could ride a whole century at this, a good century.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I don't want to throw out speeds and different things like that, because, you know, everyone rides at different speeds,
right?
And feels things and perceives things differently. But yeah, you definitely know you're working, and you're riding in a group. Again, probably the same kind of conversational aspect. You know, you can say short things to each other, but, you know, those long sort of how the family kind of concept conversations are probably not going to be happening at tempo. And you're probably going faster, you know, for those of us that are road cyclists, to the point where you're going to have to focus a bit with the riders around you. You know, it's a faster speed, things are happening a little quicker, maybe you're going into a double pace line, single pace line, so, you know, a little bit more astuteness to what's going on the road.
So during this 10 to 12 minute steady state effort, this is the time you're giving them some of the physiology?
Yeah, we're talking during the first 5 minutes just about the different muscle fibers and helping them understand things like, you know, it's not like somebody has 90% fast twitch and 10% slow. You know, you both are pretty much in the 45 to 55% range for the most part. It's not a huge percentage gap. And, you know, just talking about what different training produces. Like this type of training not only utilizes slow twitch muscle fiber, but it also promotes the conditioning of slow twitch muscle fibers.
All right. Give us a little physiology as far as what are the characteristics of a slow twitch muscle fiber?
Well, they're more oxidative, meaning the muscle fibers have the ability to utilize oxygen to produce energy. And because of that, the body is obviously not working at as high of an intensity level because our ability to use oxygen for energy is not as effective when our intensities are up. And, you know, we notice that a lot when we're having a hard time breathing.
Right.
We're working really hard, but, you know, now breathing is becoming an issue and we're augmenting. We're not cutting over, but we're augmenting with other energy pathways like anaerobic energy sources and maybe creatine phosphate if you're pushing really, really hard.
So the fuel choices for a slow twitch muscle fibers?
It's going to be predominantly fat and carbohydrate.
So it's a mixture of both. But this is where, at this intensity, where they are going to tap into the fat as a fuel source.
Yes. And the more trained they are, the more percentage of fat they'll be able to utilize.
If I can interject here,
Please.
It's just something that is always bothering me, and I'm sorry, it's not that it doesn't have anything to do with your profile, it really does, but there is, in the fitness industry, you know, they always talk about the myth of the fat burning zone. Well, I want to talk about the myth of the fat burning zone, because there is a fat burning zone. The myth is you don't have to be at a walking pace. We can be right here where you are at this somewhat hard, moderate to somewhat hard working good tempo pace, and you are using more fat. So, and by training here, you are teaching your body to adapt and to become better at this. And that's why this intensity and this profile you're talking about and educating our students about this is so important. So I just love this.
And one example I use, you know, I try to use personal examples as much as possible. In demonstrating this, even their ability to enhance it in their own bodies, because the more you can rely on fat stores, if you're an endurance athlete, the more efficient you're going to be for those long durations, is I had gotten injured a number of years ago, I had knee surgery, and because of that, I pulled myself out of competition because a lot of the competition required explosive efforts and very aggressive efforts, and my knee wasn't healing to the point where I wanted to do that. So I spent basically 2.5 years doing base slow, steady training with no high-end training. Now, I lost my high-end, so I wasn't able to sprint very well or do the zone 5 efforts. But what happened was, in testing my heart rate, when I did a VO2 test before the injury, my body was using the higher percentage of fat when my heart rate was at about 135 beats per minute. And depending on what kind of VO2 test you do, it can show you what we call substrate utilization, how much fat, how much carbs am I using at different points in my intensity. After the 2.5 years of basically not doing any explosive work and staying a steady state athlete, I retested, and now my fat utilization started to drop off, and once my heart rate got to 150.
Oh, wow.
So I had moved my efficiency to use fat from 135 heart rate to 150.
That's a huge change, and that's like, it's a no-brainer. It's like we can train here. And once again, I just want to remind people, you don't have to go in zone 1 or 2 to burn fat. If you're not training correctly, maybe that's the only place your body is burning it. So it's
perfect. And that's the whole point of training and tracking your training, is you want to see these improvements and, you know, change your training habits based on how your body is adapting.
All right. So in the Be Twitched ride, you've got a nice warm up, and you've gradually got them to the point where they're now in this 10 to 12 minute or 10 to 11 minute steady state climb?
No, it's just a steady state flat.
Okay.
And to break up the monotony in the second half, I have them do short out of the saddle efforts for only 10 to 15 seconds.
Okay.
And I try to help them understand these are not sprints. We're basically just standing at tempo. So they have to do two things. One is not, you know, jam on, you know, the pedals when they come out of the saddle, but they also need to be able to have enough resistance or load on the bike so that when they do come out of the saddle, they can maintain that speed and that tempo without, you know, spinning out. It's a great way to regulate and find out, are they using the right amount of resistance? Because if you're doing a tempo effort truly on the bike, at least as I've experienced them, you should be able to come in and out of the saddle with the amount of force you have on the pedals.
Without having to change the resistance.
Right. It should be a very relaxed. You can come on up. You kind of shake the legs out a little bit. And we can play games with it. Some people who have heart rate monitors, I ask them, okay, you came out of the saddle for 10, 15 seconds. How far did your heart rate go up? Are you able to stabilize it back down to what you had maintained as your tempo effort? So it's a great way to just kind of see where their conditioning is at, keep their mind calm, help them to think steady state.
Are you defining cadence in this portion?
I give them a range. I prefer to see this type of work done in the 90 to 100 RPM range.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, depending on who you have in your class, I mean, 90 can be fast for some people.
Yeah.
So, you know, 80 is good. I think I have the music here. I'm looking at it. Yeah, it's about 95 RPM. Yeah, it's about 95 RPM for both of those 5.5 minute segments. So kind of I'm splitting the difference.
Okay.
But, you know, make people feel successful. If they can't hold the tempo, by all means, you know, they can do 80 or whatever they need to do. We just need it to be steady.
Okay. Following that steady state?
3 minute recovery, about 3, 3.5. Sometimes I cut it short depending on the class, but usually not under 3. And, you know, a little bit of a, you know, how did it go? You know, what kind of things did they feel challenged with? You know, was it a mental challenge to hold that? You know, was it a challenge from a muscular standpoint? Was it a challenge from an aerobic standpoint? So, you know, kind of get some feedback going. You know, some people might not want to answer that, but, you know, you can at least give them some things to think about.
By asking the question globally, you're not necessarily looking for someone to raise their hand and give you an answer. You're just having them ponder what you're asking.
Absolutely. And it depends on your class. Like, I have one class that's extremely outspoken, so I'll ask it globally, and then I'll say, so does anyone have any thoughts? So, you know, that's the way they can leave it at that, or for those that are so inclined, they can throw their comments in the ring, you know.
What's next?
Well, next is a transitional drill or effort where we're on a 8-minute climb, and it's the goal of the climb is, again, it's just a steady, steady climb. So it's going to start. The goal of the climb is two things. One is we're going to put some more pressure on the legs because coming up next are some explosive efforts. So we don't want to shock the legs into a really explosive effort without having prepared them. And it does force people to start to push a little higher heart rate. And I'm advocating zone 3, zone 4. So now they're looking at, you know, 75 to 85% of their ability. So they're getting out of their comfort zone. A little bit of a mental change too, because some people get lulled into that. Okay, I'm going to hang out, you know, in this zone 3 area for a while. I like this. A lot of people like zone 3. It's, you know, it's a very happy place.
Yes.
Not too slow, not too fast, just right.
You know you're working. You're not just kind of lollygagging. You're working, but you're also not killing yourself.
Right. So, you know, there's a bit of a mental change that we need to prepare people for. There's a muscular preparation. And, of course, we're trying to get the heart rate up. So we're doing three things during that 8 minutes. And I don't do anything spectacular. You know, we'll do some in and out of the saddle work. Maybe I'll have them stand for a minute, stand for 30 seconds. I try to paint some visuals of the climb, basically just a nice meandering climb that's not too steep and, you know, not too easy, just as we described it. And I try to get them to not attack at the top. You know, there's always those people that no matter what you say, there's always KOM and QOM points at the top.
Uh-huh.
I just tell them, you know, just hold the heroics for now, and trust me, you'll need all the help you can get after we finish this climb. Another 3 minute recovery after that.
Let me back up a sec. Do you tell them, when you talk about the transitional, they're starting to engage a few more fast twitch because there is now more force required to take them up this hill?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, we're splitting fibers at this point, splitting hairs, because, you know, we're not necessarily, we're definitely recruiting. I mean, we always recruit a combination.
Right.
And so I would say that the tides are turning, but we're not trying to do any massive quick efforts that are going to provoke the neurological system to demand
a large amount of fast twitch.
It's a transitional drill.
Okay.
For that exact reason, we're definitely getting the body ready that, hey, you know, we're going to be doing something pretty intense, and all muscle fibers, all hands on deck, are going to be required. So I'm going to give them some time to recover from that, because I am looking for them. I try to encourage them to get up into zone four, and for those who feel like it, just to touch, just across threshold T2 into zone five. Again, we're not doing it in an explosive nature, but we're just letting the cumulative effect of the climb bring us there by the top.
You mean just in that 8-minute climb?
In that 8-minute climb.
Okay.
Just so when we go into zone five for the first time, you know, we're not going to shock the body.
They've already kind of, I like to say, they've already tasted it.
Exactly. They tasted it, been there, done that, bring it on.
Okay.
So, and then 3-minute recoveries is pretty much just to get them back down to hopefully zone one, so that, you know, they've got a little bit of a chance to recover aerobically, muscularly, before we start putting all this demand on the body. There's two sets of work, each separated by 3 minutes of recovery. And what I'm having them do at this point is we're bringing ourselves into a high-intensity effort. So, you know, thinking of a fast road, we ramp ourselves up to speed. And the first one is focused on higher cadence explosive effort. So we're already starting at a pretty quick cadence. In this case, the music's around 100 RPM. So again, be sensitive to those in your class who, you know, 100 RPM might be like the holy grail for them.
Right.
But anyway, the music is set there. A lot of the music is really more for intensity purposes. And I'm using the music in this case to dictate the attacks, just because it adds a lot more emotional quality to it. I start off with a 12-second attack. It's about 2 minutes in. So I got about 2 minutes to ramp their intensity up, to talk them through it. You know, I want them to bring themselves to this, whatever they consider their high level of intensity, at a nice pace so that they're not going to overshoot it and blow up. I want to sort of bring them there, hold them there, and then say, okay, from this point, you know, remember where you're at right now. From this point, we're going to do 3 attacks. And they're not sprints, but they're just attacks, and they're all out. So you just have to figure out what can you do all out and then return to where you are right now. And you know, that everyone's going to interpret that a little different. Whether they do it seated or standing, I give them, you know, it's their choice. Pick your poison, however you want to do it.
Okay.
The first one is very short. It's 12 seconds, so it's a little taster. They get about 45 seconds after that to recover, but they're still at that high-intensity effort at a very fast leg speed. The next attack is brutal. It's 60 seconds. So they're just going all out for 60 seconds. You know, you're going to have to talk them through it. You know, I've talked a lot about counting people down on intermediate time checks.
Yep.
You know, when you're already railed and then someone basically, you know, kicks you over the edge, you got to give them something. So I'll usually count them down. You got 45 seconds left. You got 30 seconds, 20, 15, 10, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I just try to keep them, you know, engaged the whole way. But letting them know as I'm counting them down out of the last 10 seconds that they're not done. You know, because sometimes they hear you counting down and their body's like, great, I'm going to shut off. I'm like, no. You know, we're going right back to that high intensity, fast cadence effort, and we got one more to go, one more attack to go.
So they're not done with the attacks, or they're not done with the, because when they're done with this, that you don't, it's not a recovery. They're not going back to zone one. They're just,
right. They're done with the attack. They're not done with the effort.
Okay.
Another 45 seconds in between. And then we lay it down one more time, this time a 45 second attack. And I like to give them a little bit at the end. It's a little extra when it's over. You know, I try to hold them for a few seconds before they shut it down, because everyone's tendency is, boom, the attack's done, I'm done. So there's about 10 seconds there at the end where they get to. I just try to get them to have a little mental discipline to not shut down right away, to go back to tempo, and then I let them go. So it's a pretty tough effort. A lot of people have not used to two things. One, riding at such a fast tempo and attacking, because the tempo they're already riding at, some people already consider that their sprint or their attack.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're telling them, no, this is actually baseline for this effort. And second, a lot of people are expecting to get fully recovered, or at least some kind of recovery, after they've done such a brutal effort. And they're not getting that either.
And this is very true in cycling. I mean, and especially if, well, even if we're not talking about racing, because a lot of our people don't race, but they do ride bikes. But if you ride a mountain bike and you have that just super hard out of the saddle surging effort, and then it eases up a little bit, you can't stop, because if you do, you'll fall over.
Right.
So you've got to, I like using those kind of visuals, is like, there is no stopping or slowing down here. The super hard effort has subsided, but you got to really reach in deep inside of you and to be able to continue.
Exactly. And that's so much of on the instructor. I mean, you set them up, that 3 minutes of recovery they have before this drill starts, you got to reinforce that. But again, anytime you're in that drill, you've got to keep your intensity up, your motivation up as an instructor to keep them focused, particularly when they're coming out of the first two attacks. Because you want them to push it as hard as they can, but they can't shut it down. So, you know, I find it's very, it takes a lot of energy for me to coach them through that.
So we've talked about the slow twitch muscles and their fuels and how they're recruited. Do you tell them, like, during your 3 minute recoveries, a little bit of the fast twitch physiology?
Yeah, I mean, a bit. I mean, obviously there's a lot of, you know, that was a slow and now we're going to go to the fast twitch.
Let's tell our listeners so that they can, maybe they don't have to explain this during this whole class, but at least they have a little better understanding of the difference. Tell us a little bit more about fast twitch muscle fibers.
Well, the fast twitch muscle fibers are going to have a quicker neurological response. So, you know, the signal to the muscle is going to be quicker. A lot of times there's more connections, there's more communication going on between the brain, the central nervous system, and the muscle, so that it is able to respond faster. And the recruitment of how many muscles or muscle fibers are activated at one time is increased, because you're trying to get a tremendous amount of force generated in a very short period of time. So it's those kind of those three aspects that are part of, I mean, there's much more to the physiology than that, but
yeah, there's two types of fast twitch muscle fibers, but basically they're the ones that we sprint with. They're the ones that we attack with. There's the ones that we call upon when we really have to put out a lot of force. And the fuel?
The fuel in this case is pretty much going to be dominant carbohydrates, sugars.
Yep.
And of course, tapping into the phosphocreatine or creatine phosphate system, which are great for those short bursts. But, you know, for about 12, you know, seconds, probably ballpark, but not much more than that.
And the last thing I'd like to add about them is that they fatigue a lot faster. They fatigue very quickly. That's the reason why you can't rely on your fast twitch muscles for a 2 hour ride.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's, yeah, those are all great things I think will help people make that connection when they're doing just a regular class that doesn't emphasize this.
Right.
They start to connect. Oh, wow, this is happening to my body. This is what I'm experiencing. Okay. I can now connect this to which, you know, muscle fiber I'm predominantly taxing at this point.
And that's another reason why I think this is such a great profile for Indoor Cycling Association instructors who are listening to this, is just purely the understanding that they're getting out of here. Okay, what's going on physiologically? Whether you're basing a profile on that or not, like we are here, is irrelevant. You are getting this information. You're learning about this.
Right, exactly.
All right, so what's up next?
Up next is another effort to further tax anything that might be left.
You're going to ring them out.
Yeah, we're basically ringing them out. And I usually tell them this is one of the few classes in one of the clubs we teach on the third floor that you are allowed to take the elevator down. So it's actually dangerous to actually take the stairs after this workout. So yeah, Joe, all joking aside, the next effort is one that kind of pushes the limits of what we consider to be proper advocated cadence in indoor cycling. I have them ride at an overloaded leg speed of 50 RPM. And the music is of that tempo. It's a pretty fun song. It's actually something. It's a song by Linkin Park. And it basically gives them 3 20-second opportunities, if they choose to take them, to try to quickly increase their leg speed from 50 RPM to 100 RPM.
Wow.
So it's basically double time. And I let them know beforehand that most likely, if they're doing this right, they will not be successful. You know, they'll get close. They might get to 85 to 90 RPM, but you know, if they get to 100 RPM on the first 20-second effort, they you know, and they feel like there's, you know, and this is one thing I definitely want to emphasize, and I emphasize this a lot, is making sure people are aware of any injuries or cautions or concerns they have, because this type of, particularly the fast twitch stuff that we're doing at the end, just really stresses the body.
Right.
So just make sure people are kind of, they have knee injuries, or they're just concerned, or their form isn't good. You know, have them focus on that, do what they can, and not, you know, go to the full extent of, hey, I'm going to overload myself and, you know, really go for it.
I actually did a ride the other day that was a force development ride, and we went, I had a song that was down to 52, but I the same thing, absolute caution, do not do this if you feel any pain or if you have any discomfort, just ride faster. Just find your personal limit. So you can never give out enough modifications.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And you know, with high intensity stuff, you know, I always say form first, fitness second.
Yep.
You know, and obviously you're always getting fit, but you know, people think, oh, I'm not going to get my workout if I don't work, you know, that hard. Well, you're not going to get your workout in if you're going to spend the next, you know, 3 weeks in a cast either. So.
Exactly. And also high resistance does involve the back muscles. So it's not just knees we're talking about. So people have to understand. And then I also want to stress that, Tom, I mean, you've been teaching at some of these clubs for a long time. You know your students really well, and you know the development that they've gone through to get to this point. So if you have a brand new student, you're not going to have them do this.
Right. And that's, you know, I think it's always something you have to do, because we never know who's going to walk into our classes.
Yep.
You know, two of the classes I teach during the week I've had for 7-8 years. So, you know, to your point, yes, I've had these for a long time, but I still have people that have, you know, come in within a month or so ago, and you know, you just keep giving out the options and let people feel successful regardless of where they are in their training. And honestly, there's some people that have been there for 8 years who can't do the explosive work. It's just not in their makeup. It's not what they're interested in doing, and that's fine.
Yeah,
you're trying to give something to everybody. I mean, I love it. Doesn't mean someone who does weekend rides on the bike path with their, you know, significant other is going to really enjoy doing this. That might not be their thing, you know.
So in the second explosive effort, you are basically riding a lot of resistance, and then for those short, what are they, 10-second bursts?
Yep.
You're just asking them to take the resistance they have and just speed up their legs.
Exactly. And I prefer them to do it seated.
Yeah.
I don't demand it, but I make a strong case for it. Because if someone has so much resistance that they can barely do 50 RPM, to come up out of the saddle with that, if they're not, you know, a trained, you know, cyclist and their conditioning is really good, the chances of them tweaking, you know, any muscles surrounding the spine is pretty, you know, there's a pretty good chance of that, because they're going to pull on the handlebars. They're going to do all kinds of stuff we don't want them to do. So I'd rather see them stay relaxed in their upper body, power through the glutes, quads, you know, and everything else they can possibly dig up in their legs, and try to accelerate from a seated position.
And would you tell them you already did say that they probably won't be able to get up to 100. The effort is to try to speed up the legs. But if they can't, then they obviously have too much on, correct?
Yeah, if they can't increase at all, then, yeah, well, obviously, if they're done, they're toasted. And I do give them, some of them, an option to say, look, if you just want to keep this, if you're already shot and you know you can't explode anymore, then just keep it steady. I mean, that is an option. You know, don't try to accelerate. Try to survive this effort, which it's only about 3 minutes long. So, you know, there's always many, many options that we can give, you know, people to help them feel like that's what they want to do. Some people like that. Some people just like to grind it out.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that. You know, it's I give them that option, and they can feel like, okay, I'm still participating in the class. I'm not going against, you know, what the instructor said.
And how do you finish the class out?
Usually I'm shoveling people off the floor. No. We do a 5-minute cool down, 5-6 minute cool down, and we I usually have them do a lot more stretching. I'll stretch them out lower leg, which is where a lot of the stresses come from. But, you know, I try to get them to take as much time as they can on their own to stretch, because there's really not, you know, even if we would have to stretch for 10 minutes,
yeah,
I think, to really, you know, do justice as far as how many muscles have probably gotten torqued, you know, to your point earlier, including the upper body muscles, you know, the shoulders, the neck, you know, all the muscles, you know, around the abdomen, the lower back. I mean, it's just, it's a full body workout.
Can I tell you another reason why I really like this profile from an educational standpoint?
Sure.
Is that I do think some people, some instructors assign a leg speed to a muscle fiber engagement, and it's not necessarily the case. I do know that I have stressed in the past that typically a spinning style of pedaling, which a spinning style in the cycling terminology means less resistance or less lower gear and higher cadence. And then obviously the force generating fast twitch muscle fibers can push a bigger gear, which for us indoors means more resistance. But that does not mean that you don't engage the fast twitch muscle fibers if you're pedaling quickly with a lot of force. And that's exactly what you've done in your two different segments of attacks. You've done it at high leg speed and you've done it at slower leg speeds. And obviously you're speeding your legs up against the big resistance, but you're engaging those fast twitch muscle fibers at different cadences. And I think do you agree that that's a good educational component of this ride?
No, I absolutely agree. And in that same vein, one of the things I'll do sometimes is I'll ask my class, you guys want to learn how to climb, you know, like a major mountain, like a pro? And of course, everyone's, you know, some people are like, no, because they kind of know it's a trick question coming from me. But, you know, those who are, you know, not paying attention, yeah, sure. I'll actually have them do a very severe climb at 80 to 90 RPM.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. I want them to realize that climbing is not 60 RPM, because that's kind of what we're used to. Oh, it's a droning beat. We must be climbing. You know, it's a trance song. It's all climbing. It's like, no, we can. So if you watch, you know, real serious pros climb, you know, when they're not totally wiped out and exhausted, they are, you know, targeting 80 to 90 RPM.
Yeah.
So, you know, I basically set that up for them, and we can maybe do a profile on that at some point. It would be kind of fun. But it helps them show some of the reasons why us mere mortals don't climb at 80, 90 RPM, because we like our lungs, you know, in our chest and not hanging over the handlebars.
I try. You know, as you know, I live in the Rockies. And it's just,
yes, you do.
Without putting a triple on my bike, I can't get my legs going much faster on these mountains than, you know, in the high 70s. And even then I'm dying. But
Stuff.
Well, that's a killer workout, Tom. This betwitched. I am betwitched.
Bewitched and betwitched.
And let's invite those listening to post questions about, obviously, about this profile and teaching it, but also if you have questions about the physiology of it, because, you know, what we're trying to do is ignite your brain cells to want to know more. So.
Right.
Post those questions, and Tom and I will answer them the best we can. And
maybe we can provoke Jennifer Clow.
Well, we can always.
I always learn something every time she comments. So if I can provoke her on something, we'll see if we can get her to input on some of those comments as well.
There we go. Well, I will schedule an interview with her coming up soon.
Great.
Well, thanks again, and. We'll remind everyone that next Thanksgiving, we're going to redo this climb, but throw in the turkey cues.
If you want, you know, if it's not going to offend people. I told them this is one of the first classes I'm going to give them the bird. So, because you know, when are you going to get away with that kind of stuff? You just have to take it when you can. So.
All right. Thank you so much, Tom.
You're welcome, Jennifer.